Hi and welcome to episode 44 of the State of Retention Marketing podcast. Today's conversation is going to be very new to all of us because it's from the F&B industry. You may not have heard of Impresario handmade restaurants, but for sure you've heard of the brands. You've experienced these brands like Social, Antisocial, Saltwater Cafe, Smokehouse Deli, and Boss Burger. Have you? In this conversation, we've got Rahul, who's had a very interesting and long journey in the career of retention marketing. CRM analytics and loyalty for both fashion and food industries, which are both topics of great fascination for me personally. Thank you so much for joining us, Rahul. Good to have you here. So Rahul, would love to understand a bit about your journey. How did you end up in the whole career of CRM, which is not the most common path really, but you've entered analytics, you've run your startup, and now you're running CRM in a hospitality company. Tell us a bit about your journey.
So I started my journey in customer behavior from my startup. WonderCard, I set up a travel startup. I was offering adventure tours. That gave me an opportunity to understand consumer behavior in a new segment. Mm-hmm. Adventure travel was something new, and the perception of a customer, the behavior of the customer in terms of the travel industry was very new.
Sure.
So that gave me that interest to build my career in CRM, customer behavior analytics. When I left my startup, when I stopped it, I joined an agency that offered CRM, loyalty, customer analytics services to multiple brands. And that was based out of Gurgaon. I worked in brands like PVR, Pizza Hut, Fab India. While in this agency, I set up the Fab India loyalty program, which was quite interesting. It gave me the opportunity to work on more than 50 lakh customers at that time that Fab India had. So the behavior, the understanding was quite unique. Mm-hmm. And then I built up my career. I moved to Biba, to Fab India, and then eventually Impresario Hospitality.
So you understand how Indians do a lot of things, right? In terms of their behaviors on food, on apparel, on fashion. And you mentioned about PVR, so entertainment as well. And now Impresario is a combination of everything. Very interesting. So, what does, let's say, retention, loyalty, CRM analytics mean in your world at Impresario? If you could break it down for us, this is, let's say, what you care about. You collect enough first-party data. Just go to the basics.
Hospitality, data and hospitality, they don't go together. Somehow, the experience of a customer when myself or you, for that matter, when we go to a restaurant, we are not used to giving a mobile number or any mark of in that way.
Identifier.
So after COVID, brands like Impresario realize that we don't have much data. We don't have any behavior of the customer. We don't know how to reach out to the customer, what to offer, which customers to prioritize. So that's when the importance of data got understood. Impresario, being a 22-year-old company, having multiple brands, we started collating data. And once that exercise was initiated, we realized there was a lot of gaps.
Okay.
Data existed in pockets. We didn't know if the data was relevant anymore. That's when we started a QR code ordering system, DotPay. We've been working with DotPay for some time now, and we've achieved or collated enough data to build some understanding and use that.
And this is me scanning the QR code on the table to choose what I want to order, place the order, and eventually pay as well. So this is practically an e-commerce-ish experience, but in the offline context.
Yep.
And that gives you all of the data of people ordering inside socials and perhaps the other brands as well.
We have a standalone, all of our brands are separate.
Sure.
The customer base is different. The behaviors are different.
Mm-hmm.
So we have standalone systems for Smokehouse, for Social.
Okay.
And also our loyalty program works within DotPay as well. So you can redeem your points, earn points.
Out of the Social ecosystem and the DotPay ecosystem.
Yeah.
Which is fine. So just the understanding of this user behavior and what comes out of it in terms of things that you now do with it. Help us understand a couple of user stories that you've taken from the database that you collected via the DotPay effort. And what did you do with it initially?
So initially, when we had the data, it was about database marketing. That's the first step that everyone does. We know that there's X number of customers in one outlet. We reach out to them with all the offers or anything that is happening.
And eventually, In that outlet.
Okay. Or in that city for that matter. But eventually, the costs are way too high. Customers get upset. They start blocking us.
This is usually SMS.
SMS, mostly.
WhatsApp also.
WhatsApp as well.
And expensive
channel. And WhatsApp is getting expensive every year. So sending too much communication to the same customer eventually just annoys the customers. So once we realized that CRM is not database marketing, we started building customer journeys, understanding personas, understanding what the customer wants from social. Social has multiple avenues. There's dining, there's workspace, there's events, programming, community. So there's a lot of touch points that the customers engage with social and Smokehouse Delhi. So the idea was to understand all the touch points at in what way the customer interacts with DotPay, with the billing system, events, programming, and build personas of the customers.
Sure.
So that is something that we've been working on for the last 1 year. We've identified clusters and cohorts which behave in a certain way, and we push out communication and offers and reach out to them, to the customers, in a way that helps us to drive more business and more align the customers.
You know, in some sense, this would be a lot of learning from your last few years in the whole CRM function in terms of churning data and driving user insights and action. And what was the world like back at, let's say, Easy Rewards when you're doing PVR? Was it still substantially database marketing, or was it a slightly more, let's say, evolved or sophisticated system at play already? Because this is, you know, almost 6 years ago we're talking about, right?
I think that's the first step for all the brands that I've worked with. For them, understanding CRM is the first step, and that can take anywhere from a quarter to 3 years, 4 years.
And that's usually because at the top level, they don't think natively like that, and they need to bring people like you to be able to talk like that. Or why do you think it takes 3 years?
The first thing is to make the brands understand, or a company understand, the importance of data.
Sure.
Pre-COVID, brands thought that, well, the customer is coming to the outlet, you know, why do we have to capture data?
Sure.
Post-COVID, or during COVID, brands realize that without data or without understanding of the customers, they don't know who to reach out to.
Which is the big change COVID seems to have brought in.
Yeah. So okay, that is a change in the way the customer behaves, as well as how the brands perceive CRM and loyalty. Once you understand the data, it doesn't mean that the behavior of the customer is aligned with how the brands want the customers to behave.
Of course.
For example, in Impresario, most of the customers still don't give their mobile numbers.
Because so, they don't want to be spammed, or what is the reluctance
not,
about?
It's so when you go to a social on Saturday night, it's busy. The QR code is there lying on the table somewhere. It's so much easier to ask the waiter to take the order, ask about discounts, what special offers are running. So it's the behavior of the customer is not that, you know, you sit on a table, you scan a QR code and you place an order through that.
Sure.
That behavior...
You've tried to tease this for a while and still it hasn't gotten there.
It's getting better. I think loyalty has helped us to create a pull towards DotPay to QR code ordering. But the behavior is still not there. So, like I said, we want the customer to behave in a certain way. But that does not necessarily happen. So, there's a gap. And that is a journey that takes time, the evolution of the customer.
Part one is brand's adoption of, let's say, a slightly more sophisticated approach in some sense. And then the consumer response to that approach itself might also take time.
Yep.
And, you know, what do you think the world of, let's say, entertainment in PVR, the world of fashion at Biba or at Fab India, what are the core differences that you've observed that, okay, this is where we feel the consumer behavior is entirely different for this category versus this category?
So in retail, I think we're used to giving a mobile number because it's a set pattern at the time of billing. So for CRM, for loyalty, data capture is the base of everything.
Sure.
We have to capture the customer's data, the interaction with every channel at every touch point, without which we can't understand the customer's behavior. We can't understand the preferences of the customer. So that in retail is there. So
this is the whole card regimen, right? You had this whole loyalty card being given out by people like Shoppers Stop, and pretty much every brand then followed suit just to be able to unify transaction history. Otherwise, there was no way to know what Rahul has been shopping with a particular brand over the last 5 years, and then correspondingly no way to target or communicate with you either. So then the card apparently became one way, and then it moved to mobile number-based systems, and then loyalty started to play out. So in the world of PVR, for example, would this be a similar question where a ton of the things happen from, let's say, a Book My Show, and PVR doesn't have a lot of first-party data? and they automatically tend to gravitate towards pushing their own assets that, you know, you want to book at PVR.com or using a PVR mobile app would mean something slightly more if you were to do that. Is that something as a pattern you've seen happen?
So PVR, I think it's easier now because customers do book their tickets in advance.
There's always a percentage.
So the data captured in PVR or Pizza Hut for that matter, anything that is primarily online, the purchase behavior, you have a lot of touch points.
Sure.
You know what movies or, you know, what items in the menu the customer has gone through.
Mm.
And you can build understanding of the customer basis that. Retail, it's
much harder.
It's much harder, but yes. Less harder than F&B for sure.
F&B is even worse. So let's just, you know, zoom into the part which is engaging with the QR and giving you all that information, right? So now as a consumer, I have come in, I've ordered a few things. It's a particular time of the day or day of the week, and you have this information available with you. And in terms of the first use cases, you said the database marketing of whatever the local outlet situation is, or perhaps next the local city situation is, it's the kind of, let's say, execution that's happened. Is there a, let's say, question mark around the business case, ROI, why do this, what is incremental value? Is this purely transaction driven? How do you show value from all of these efforts?
Looking at social as a brand, we have dine-in, we have events, we have workspace. The idea is to build a hyper-local cafe. Customers come in, they come in to eat, to drink, to work out of, and also to attend events, socialize. We want to create a place where people also, disconnect from a lot of things.
You mentioned an interesting example about taking the cell phones out.
Exactly. Sure. So that's something that we did. It worked pretty well.
Yeah.
Especially with Gen Z, you know, coming in, disconnecting.
What's with all those missing Instagram posts then?
I know. It's they posted later on that they did something different.
Yeah, but I like the idea of Instagram off.
It is actually, it helps, but getting back to what social stands for, we want customers to interact or to engage at all these touch points.
Sure.
The journey of Impresario, we have the data. So when we started capturing the customer's data in dine-in, that was the first step. A lot of community events that happened in social was something that was posted in social media. Initially, and there was an RSVP, customers gave them mobile numbers, sometimes they didn't. It was just to spread an awareness that we're having this event at social.
Sure.
Once we started capturing data via DotPay, we realized the importance of data. Now, we had data of, let's say, 20-30% of our customers. We were hungry for more. We wanted to understand the behavior of the customers at other touch points.
Sure.
So we set up a Wi-Fi system. So to work or to use social's Wi-Fi, we capture their mobile
number. Phone number, fair.
So that was Wi-Fi for workspace. Then we moved to Paytm Insider for events. So we were getting data. Or we are getting
Paytm Insider passes you the data?
We get the data from Paytm Insider. Cool. So we had registers and papers to write down reservations initially.
Right.
If somebody came to a social outlet, and there was no table available, you were writing the... We had a register.
Which is what 90% of places still do, right?
Yeah, it's still done. So, but we realized that, you know, that register is not going anywhere.
But it's so powerful.
It's not
In terms of data, I mean, obviously, the data captured is very powerful, but in the format it is in, it's exactly. Not very actionable.
Hmm. And there was a lot of data that was sitting in silos and in different outlets. The outlet managers had their own list.
Sure.
Excel files where they had their core customers, regular customers. So most of the effort post-COVID, when we realize the importance of data, is going to collate all these data sources.
Well, you know, I find a very interesting counterpart in my life at Foodpanda back in 2014. Back then, restaurants were not, let's say, very open to online orders. And I'm talking about the situation where the daily online order count was 1,000 orders per day overall in India. Okay, this is the time we're talking about, 2014. So in order to get the restaurants to pay attention to these orders, there was a guy sitting in a call center, online order received. This guy will call the restaurant, place the order on phone, and then the follow-through will happen. Then they evolved to this whole world of printers. And, you know, there'll be a small little printer, the restaurant, when an order comes in, it'll get printed and this guy will attend to it. And then eventually this whole reception on a tab, now there's a POS system which integrates online orders and all of that. So in that sense, whatever CRMs were being run on restaurant POS systems were fairly rudimentary database marketing in some sense, right? And that's why what you're now saying is post-COVID, that world has evolved. Even the waiting queues are probably maintained on a tablet where you enter mobile numbers, you have your name and you have potentially the history of the person involved. But in terms of, let's just say, the user experience differential with this, if I were to participate by giving my phone number and I'm a loyalist to a social, what would change in my experience?
So once we know what you like, once we know why you come to social, is it if it's only for workspace, you like working out of social, then we know what to give you to make you a loyal customer.
Okay.
If it's workspace, we know you need free Wi-Fi, you need good coffee, cheap coffee maybe because you drink too much. And maybe you want to disconnect from work at some point and move to having a beer.
Sure.
So once we know what excites you, why you come to social.
When I'm sitting in there, right? Which means you can actually influence behavior in real time and actually get ready to take action in real time.
Yeah.
And have you considered doing some of these? I mean, this is off track, but I'm very curious if you consider doing any degree of, let's say, offline socializing behaviors. And, you know, there's somebody sitting across the room who's potentially from a similar industry and you might like to have a chat. I'm guessing it's intrusive, but you can also have an opt-in mechanism of some sort that, you know,
it's coming.
You socialize as social.
It's not very far, though.
That's what I can cool. Say. Very exciting. That should be fun.
So we're looking on those lines. We know that people come to social to connect. And connection could be for work, could be for meeting friends and family, of course. So we are building a mechanism that will help like-minded people connect with each other.
Very cool.
That should be out.
No, in some sense, there's this whole technology evolution which had to happen in terms of just the data capture coming out of those Excel sheets and getting into a single system, which itself is a leap because it's a big behavioral change on various paths, and the data integrity, the data accuracy to solve for it might itself take a certain amount of time, right? So from an org perspective, it needs a certain amount of drive, emphasis. The guys at the front need to appreciate why should they care, and then they will start to care. And crossing that over, now you have these different segments who are coming in from different entry points in some sense. You spoke about the events world, the programming world, the co-working or the workspace world, and then the world. Talk about this is only the evening dinner and drinks experience world. These are different cohorts of people entering your system. So if I'm trying to understand the audience journey in the world of impresario, then okay, let's say out of 100 people who come into our ecosystem new every month, this is different sources. And this is typically how the journey plays out. Then, you know, people who come in from work, over a period, we'll want to move them from, let's say, a single workday per month to 5 workdays per month or something. How do you organize this data? How do you segment? How do you understand and interpret this?
So the first cut that we look at is, of course, the channel. So that's food, drinks, workspace, events.
Sure. That's the channel of entry.
Then we look at overlap between these channels. We want to understand if you're a vegetarian, non-vegetarian, you like alcohol, what alcohol you like, what time you want to drink. Are you an afternoon drinker, an evening drinker?
Well, that's amazing happy hour play for you, right? I mean, otherwise that space would have been probably not as well utilized.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, so again, there's also a shift in how customers perceive discount. That is something that is important across all our cohorts because there's a percentage of customers that come for discounts. So they're very sensitive to the offers. So when we look at events as well, we look at customers that bought tickets when there was a discount.
So in some sense, this seems like a lot of cuts, right? You have behavior, you have order patterns, you have time of day, you have day of week. And this can pretty quickly get pretty messy in terms of how many campaigns are you going to run every day. And you have several outlets. Now, socials has what, I think 30?
51.
Wow, okay, that's... seems to be like a pretty fast-paced road there. But 50 outlets and 50 different, let's say, communities you're dealing with, perhaps at some city level, maybe some consolidation. But how do you organize this from a people lens? That, you know, how big is your team? How do they look at their daily prioritization of all of these?
We have outsourced a lot of data management, our loyalty, CRM to external partners. Of course, we are still building our understanding. It's still very new.
Sure.
It's been, for a 22-year-old company, CRM and loyalty has just been a couple of years. Right?
Yeah, I can imagine. Of course, this whole, I mean, paper registers and Excel files were still doing enough and social had enough demand to not worry about all of this. I'm guessing it still does, but there's always this extra room to find more, right?
So I think the first step, it's collating the data. It's taking quite some time. Mm. Still collating a lot of data. There's still data sitting in multiple silo. You know, with people that, and also there's a lot of stickiness because you know, outlets, they feel that when they have a list of 100 customers, if they just keep reaching out to them, pushing the same offers, they would come back.
Yeah, and the thing that would work, and it practically works, or it doesn't.
So there's no trackability. Right? So they send personal WhatsApp messages to these customers. Sometimes they come, sometimes they don't. When they come, they don't give their mobile number. So there's no trackability.
In some sense, you're operating a bit blind, but I don't know, 50% or maybe less or more?
Could be more even, because we don't want to...
That's the reality. That's fine.
We don't want to stop that practice because also there's...
there's some incrementality to it.
Yeah. But I think what's important is to have trackability in every effort, and that is where the learning comes from of customer.
Yeah, but to institutionalize that 50 outlet scale is not easy because that guy on the front end doesn't necessarily see the entire larger picture of the value, right? Very interesting. So in some sense, you know, I would take it a little step back to say that, you know, from a brand ethos, from a culture ethos, from generally how you want to be a USP as a brand, you would have tried to institutionalize some of these things across all of these locations. There's a lot of, let's say, SOPs and guidances and how the exact LIT is served across multiple places, the glassware, the barware, a lot of things that are central, right? I mean, that's all part of the social's brand promise in some sense to the consumer. So what does that manifestation from your world look like, right? So one is, what is that strong USP that you want to go by? You spoke about connection in that. If that's the answer, then so be it. But what is that the articulated stance across these 50 places?
So I would like to mention that, you know, F&B is something, there could be variations.
Sure.
And there are variations, of course, because it's something that is made on demand. It's not coming from the same person. Having a mechanism of standardization is very important in F&B, especially when you promote something to a customer. We send out an image of a food item, for instance. We had something in the winter menu, which we're promoting pan-India. So the food has to look the same
standardized,
across all the 51 outlets. And there could be variations. I think that is something that our ops team is doing pretty well. It's been something that we have mechanisms in place to ensure that, you know, it's unanimous and it's same across all the outlets, and also across, say, across all the promotional channels that we have, whether it's digital, whether it's CRM. And that is a challenge also, because if the operations is not savvy or up to, you know, the online efforts that we do via CRM or digital, that becomes a gap.
And so you end up promoting Patiala, whatever, and you know, those guys run out of sugar canes. That's going to be a nightmare, right?
So that hasn't happened as yet, but of course,
which is where the operations team sync with you guys is to be pretty critical.
Exactly, and I think especially with DotPay and other platforms where we have a digital menu, we also have menus in Flippingbook, which is a platform that we use to.
That's the fancy tablet menu.
The tablet menu.
Sure.
So we use that in CRM.
There's a lot of visual appeal to some of the food and beverages anyway. So I think, I mean, I've seen a lot of people do that. I want that test tube, large blue colored thing, right? I think that's what happens on socials all the time. So from a lens of let's just say the standardization across this ecosystem, and somewhere or the other, the control being with the local guy versus the central guy might also be a question mark, because this guy is slightly more comfortable WhatsApping his 100 favorite customers who probably know him by name, vis-a-vis having a non-personal central system doing this. How do you solve for that?
So it's a journey. So I think the first step is, like I said, collation of data was important.
Sure.
It was important. The second is to make internal stakeholders understand CRM and loyalty, of course, because the first perception is that we are a 20-year-old brand. Customers have to be loyal to us. it doesn't happen. I think there's so much competition. If you sit in Gurgaon, there's so many local bars which serve alcohol way cheaper than we do. So why would the customer come to social and not go to this local bar? That is something that we have to answer, you know, to the customer. Now, so loyalty is one part of it. Now, the operations team still believes that sending messages or WhatsApp messages to the customer is the right way. And that is a behavior change that we are working on to ensure that, you know, internally we make them understand that it's about journey mapping of the customer. As a customer, we have to build our CRM and loyalty practice bottoms up. This is the behavior of the customer, what they want to, why do they come to social? And we are working on that journey to build.
So if I were to attach a couple of core KPIs on your organization in terms of what the CRM and retention practice is supposed to look like, let's just say I know from my data that people come 2x a month to the socials brand. Now, my goal is to have this cohort come 3 times a month. You might say that, okay, of all the people who come into socials in a month, I have 20% of the audience, which is net new. These have never come to socials before, at least not in my recorded systems. And let's just say for a moment that that's the error space you're willing to live with, because beyond that, you don't have visibility, right? People might have come and they might not register it. So you'll treat them as like a first-time customer. So in that lens, is there a set of KPIs that you've articulated that, okay, this is what we'll chase and this is how business gets positively influenced?
So the way that we look at data is, of course, we have existing customers that we already have tagged in the database. We have new customers. Like you rightly said, a lot of customers don't give their mobile numbers when they come, and they might be very regular customers. That could also be that the outlets could know the customers by face. They would know what the customer usually orders. So they would not force the customer, or the customer is not used to using a platform like DotPay or QR code systems to place an order. So that creates a bias in our database. Within the cohort of existing customers, we look at recency-based segments. We look at active customers. Of course, we look at recently lapsed customers, dormant customers, to build some understanding on when the customer last came to an outlet. This is the data that we have. Again, that's based on DotPay data, because that's what we capture.
That's a
We also look at frequency cuts. We look at monetary cuts. Within the RFM cuts, which is purely bill level based understanding, we also look at category cuts. So we look at customers that only come in for food, which is very few, because social is an alcohol
brand.
A lot of our sales comes from alcohol, and customers love our cocktails.
Your drinks, of course.
So so again, the idea that we want to build is that you come to social for a drink, and food is there. So so we look at the mix between foods, drinks. When the customer got lapsed, what was the last item that they ordered? And again, we start building a journey. We start building a story around that to get the customers to come back.
And your way to measure this entire effort outcome, you know, in a monthly basis, this is the kind of business impact that the CRM function is delivering. What would that look like? I mean, there are various cuts to it in terms of getting relapsed customers back, dormant customers back, improving cart value. What are the metrics that you typically surface at your level?
So we look at incremental revenue of the customer. Typically, we do have system where we use a test and control mechanism.
I was about to ask that.
Put the customers, some customers aside. It's dynamic, it's random. We see the uplift, because social has a lot of appeal. A lot of customers come to social organically. Also, there's a lot of campaigns that are happening. Like I said, outlets are pushing.
There's offline stuff as well, and you offline stuff have a too. Bunch of marketing channels all the time.
So we do outdoor promotions, there's digital. We have branding on Paytm Insider, we're selling tickets there. So the test and control might not work all the time, but at least it gives us that indicator.
As far as first party execution is concerned, it's still legit that people who did not get this message, they obviously still got all of those. And if you stop the entire first party promotion, they'll still continue to see all of those. So the incrementality on this might just be a reasonable lens.
We've kind of we're okay with that.
Made
bias
peace with it. Itna hi pata hai.
Itna hi hai. So we look at incremental data. And of course, we also look at touch points, because I think, let's say, we look at last year's data. We say, okay, like post New Year's Eve, in the first week of January, what was the footfall? We look at the increment on that compared to last year. We also look at in terms of ticket sales. So if a customer, let's say, has bought 100 tickets, well, in a certain duration, we compare that with a previous duration. We look
at the same customer?
What kind of customers.
Or the cohort?
The cohort.
Got it.
And we look at what kind of customers have bought those tickets. Because that is a learning that we didn't have earlier on. Now that you have a single view of the customer, which has all these different data sources, we say, okay, the customer who likes alcohol, who has come to social 10 times last year is the one who's bought this kind of ticket. So basis that learning, then we start building similar lookalike audiences to push.
A very, you know, random, intriguing question to ask. What's your highest consumption against an individual that you've seen? So like someone's drinking 200 days a year at a social across brands?
So there's two biases that exist. One is there's a lot of corporates that that come down. They have parties at social.
Sure.
And since we have loyalty points and we have all those benefits.
So HRP points.
Wo apna, apna number dalte and then, you know, they earn points. And naturally, when we see like 1 lakh points against a customer, then we know that.
This is okay. I mean, you can't hold it against them because nobody else would get those points and somebody has to.
So when loyalty is live initially, there's a lot of misuse that can happen. So that...
So wo data ko destroy kar dega. So legit answer, if you were to look for individuals who are just doing multiple sessions of a reasonable ticket size, that would be slightly hard to find, but still something that came to your light?
So CyberHub has a pattern. CyberHub, there's a lot of corporates that come in.
Sure.
So in an organization of this 50 people, there's always a birthday every month.
Sure.
So there's always a birthday party from that particular company every month. You know, that happens. And social, CyberHub outlets, so what we do with social also is that all our outlets are customized in a way. So every outlet is different. They're built
contextualized around the space it switches in.
So CyberHub, for instance, has small rooms. It's built on a Mumbai Chowl kind of a theme. There's separate rooms that we built.
Okay.
Which the customers love. So
more private spaces. Sorts.
It's more private spaces. And that works for CyberHub because there's a lot of groups that come
in. And teams.
Which like that coziness, that separate area where they can just party. So
somehow you don't do that at BKC Social. This is like just all mixed up. But it's probably the real estate in Bombay. I don't know if it's much worse than CyberHub though.
Yeah, it's different. So but Mindspace Social, we've opened in Hyderabad, which is one of our largest outlets. That also has these private spaces, but it's more open. So it's green, it's open. We have separate areas where you can work, party.
So in some sense, social has a personality at the company level, but also each outlet has its own personality in some sense. The kind of audience is designed for. And it's contextual to the kind of ecosystem it exists in.
Yeah. And I think that's another reason for customers to explore different outlets. So Hoskas Village, for instance, we have a chat, which is a different vibe altogether.
Yeah.
You sit on the chat in the winter. Like today, for instance, there's a bit of fog. Sit in the chat, there's Sufi music playing. You get a bunch of LITs.
Yeah, and you have,
that's all you want.
LITs or perhaps hot toddy, but sure, I get the drift. So, you know, generally speaking, as an audience behavior and the insights that you've been able to develop from there, is there a pattern to say that people go to an area, then they want to check out possible options, then they'll come to socials? Or is this more like, wahan ke socials jana hai? Because do you promote destinations that, you know, socials experience of, let's say, a chat? Now, at Hoskas Social, if the chat is the most important USP, would that appear in your marketing in some sense to kind of promote this one outlet compared to the brand?
It does. So, for instance, chat is something that customers come in summer, May, in the evening.
Sure.
In winters, it's open. You have a good day, sunny. You want to sit on a terrace which has a good sunlight. You want to have a couple of beers with a good ambience, good view. So that is how contextually we promote.
You know, would this be available to the restaurant manager to say in real time that, hey, I'm running at half capacity right now. I have X number of tables free. If you next come in the next 45 minutes, I can give you, let's say, a one-on-one and beer for the next 3 hours.
So that's the level of customization that we're working on. And that's where technology adoption
has to solve. But if this gets done, this is amazing, right? Because then there's superpower in the hands of the restaurant manager and you're like running full capacity all the time, then it's busy.
I know. So that helps. And I think that's something that we want to eventually... start doing. There's also a lot of evolution that is happening on the tech side.
Sure.
We have DotPay, we have Rista, we're getting CleverTap, and a couple of other partners. We have Zeno for loyalty. So all these have to work together to build that customized experience, more contextual, more personalized experiences, and of course the communication that follows that.
I think to me the whole empowerment of the guy on the front end can be like the game changer, because then he has his own buy-in to why this matters, right? Because then he'll make sure that all the customer data is also getting into the system. All this data is also in terms of utilization, all the possible creative ideas, because he's on the front and he'll be the one that people will ask you, what is the offer that's available? And tomorrow if I have to have an offer on a cocktail versus you, an offer on, you know, something else, that might just be the way to do it. And I think, is there a brand that you like in some sense as a reference point for F&B that has done a good job here? Because you've seen some international brands, some Indian brands now doing some of this.
So I think QSR, like McDonald's, it's easier for them. Because sure. somehow, when you stand on a counter, customers have that behavior, they're okay to give their mobile number. When you're sitting in a restaurant, personally, even I would avoid giving my number.
Sure.
Because it's not about giving your number, it's about how the brands use those numbers. And I think that is something that the brands...
Most brands spam away to glory, exactly. right? And that sucks.
And that is a practice that we are working on where we don't want to spam the customers. Mm. I've been spammed earlier by a lot of brands and I would avoid giving my number to a lot of brands.
The same stuff, right? That Mahindra Holidays guy will just keep coming with that little exactly. thing, you know, give me your number and I'll send yeah. you a free holiday lottery. Dude, that's not worth my while. Sorry, so you were saying...
So that's the challenge. I think when you go to a QSR restaurant, a McDonald's mm. or a Pizza Hut, you're okay to give a number because you get a lot of coupons and a lot of other
in
things.
In some sense, it's almost like they ask in a fashion, it's as if you can't cross over without giving that number.
It is like so, that.
I mean, you could say, do you really need it? But that yeah. takes one more effort and you might as well tell the number and get on with it.
Yeah. So I think F&B dine-in is more about the experience. Mm. QSR, it's more about quick food. So you're okay not to get a certain level of service, but I think it's more about getting it fast. I want to leave ASAP.
Which is also then the step around when I'm putting my name in the waiting queue, that I have my phone number because that's the guy supposed to call me. Once I've come in and got on the table, then you have no idea what the connection there is.
Yeah.
Right? So in some sense, the data, while you have that phone number, you don't have anything else on him. The fact that he's ordered this much quantity, he came in with these many people, you don't have that information. But I'm wondering if you've tried any kind of consumer, let's say, incentive to say that, okay, if you give us your number, this is the 10th thing that can happen for you. And have you considered having an app? Because to me, an F&B brand which has a certain level of loyalty and engagement, it might just be worthwhile to have a direct channel with your consumers, right?
So one of the most important things that differentiates F&B with retail is feedback. The mm. voice of the customer is important because when you buy something like a sweater or a shirt, it's very standardized. It's more about the size of it and you can live with it. But food is very personal. It's about the salt, the sugar, the spice in a food, how tender the meat is. So there's a lot of custom things that a customer might like or dislike.
Mm.
And that is something very important, especially for our delivery business, where we get a lot of feedback. And I think it's more easier to capture the customer's feedback in delivery because right. Zomato, Swiggy, mm. our own platform has a mechanism to capture the customer's voice.
Mm.
But in a dine-in experience, unless you have a very bad experience, we don't give a feedback.
You don't report. Mm.
Unless there's something really bad, you don't say, you know, or you don't go to social media. I've got mails from customers sure. that they've had bad experiences and we've resolved it.
Sure.
We've resolved it within 24 hours. We've given customers free food, loyalty points, anything to please the customer. But there's no mechanism where we capture the customer's feedback and it goes into a central system.
Got it. And at some point, you'll want to solve for that at the overall experience level, service level, product quality level, menu design level. How's the new winter menu coming along? Are people adopting to it or not? So there are a lot of data points that could become very fascinating if it gets captured. But tell me something now, the orders that are being placed by the staff in the ecosystem, is that not happening on a device against a table number or whatever? Or is that still a pen and paper?
The orders get captured in our billing system.
System would still... Table number, this is the bill, but there's no phone number there. Is there a phone number?
There's no phone number there. So it's something that we're trying to ask our servers to ask the customer for sure. their mobile number, but also you're a bit hesitant. Unless the server has... We have tablets in the outlets, but sometimes the outlets are way too busy, you know, for someone to...
Yeah.
Do that.
So DIY would be the ideal scenario. I mean, it's a coverage question. A lot of 100 customers, let's say 50 of them are giving you this. So there is a certain degree of, let's say, data coming in. And as long as these guys have some incremental value come in their way, that, you know, there's a free cake that came to the table and the waiters would, I mean, the people would wonder why did they get it. Mm-hmm. It's social loyalty or whatever. And then that could possibly drive that behavior forward as well.
So something that we are working on, of course, is to build... that customized experience.
Hmm.
We have a certain level of understanding of the consumer. We are capturing more data points, their date of birth, their gender, we also have the feedback now. We have a mechanism to capture the feedback of the customer. And that will help us to create a personalized, to curate an experience for the customer for their birthdays. We know if a customer comes to social or has celebrated their birthday in social the last year or the year before, we would like to curate an experience for the customer for their birthday.
Sure.
And that is based on data, their feedback.
So Rahul, you put a certain amount of emphasis on the ability to listen into feedback. And there's two parts to it. One part is, what is the engine that absorbs actions, solves for this feedback? Predominantly because a lot of times it will be complaints, right? People don't write back when they have happy experiences. They'll probably just smile, say thank you and get out. But when they have a problem, they'll escalate to whoever they can, perhaps on online platforms as well as to direct communications as well. And now that I know that you work at socials, maybe the next time I have something, I'll probably just write to you directly as well, because it's just, you know, having that access is interesting. But what is the framework? How do you address this? What was the last piece of feedback that drove something meaningful at the, in terms of a change that you drove?
So feedback for us is very new. Feedback started from pen and paper. There was little slips at the outlets to put your feedback. Both feedbacks are important. Negative feedback is also important. Good feedback also is important, because we want to understand if we're doing the right thing. Well, for online deliveries, there's a mechanism. Customers are used to of you know, giving feedbacks, even if there's rating systems. It's kind of part of the flow. Capturing feedback for dine-in is difficult, because when do you capture the feedback? When the customer is leaving, the customer is in a hurry to leave. An outlet or a brand like social, there's a lot of rush at the outlets. So a server cannot go to the customer and ask them to enter something. So we have been working on a feedback mechanism for a couple of months now. We're still figuring out the best point when we want to ask the customers to enter feedback. We've looked at physically taking feedback on a tablet. We're also exploring a WhatsApp. Send out a WhatsApp message to the customer. But we know what to capture. That is, that's the step that we're working on. Now we've had experiences where customers. So I think the first thing is to have a way, or the customer. It should be intuitive. Like if the customer wants to say something, it has to be visible, because customers struggle, especially in offline. How do they reach out to the right people? They look up on Google. They leave it on Google reviews. Send a WhatsApp message back to our WhatsApp number. So we've captured feedback across all these areas. Now, Google is not the right way to do it.
Can't respond. I mean, you can only go so far with just
petrol. You can only go so far.
It's a public platform.
Exactly. And you have to, somebody has to be actively looking at that. And, you know, there's a mechanism, you know. So similarly on LinkedIn or Facebook, it's there, the social listening tools that, you know, you have. But the idea is to have a mechanism to capture the feedback. There have been specific instances. So typically for us, a feedback could be about the outlet. Could be the behavior of the staff, could be the food, could be the tidiness, the washrooms. So I've had, in CRM, I've had instances where the customer has gotten wrong messages. And I think technology is good to use technology, but then somebody has to also ensure that the communication goes right, especially in loyalty, especially when you're communicating something to the customer. So the redressal of these cases typically is somebody has to reach out to the customer. We ensure that now that we have a mechanism, it will be a lot easier for us. But earlier, when through whatever channels we got a feedback, for offline, the local team reaches out to the customer. And typically, we do the redressal via getting the customer back to the outlet. We want the customer to re-experience the social wali feeling.
The fixed social wali experience.
And enjoy
the optimal experience.
Give a couple of LITs or something, you know, just to...
Yeah, I mean, that might just sometimes get abused as well, right? If I want a free LIT, I'll just scrimp for nothing. But so, I'm assuming that's a very small part of the overall play in terms of the number of free LITs you have to give away to fix poor experiences. I mean, hopefully.
So... You have to come down to social and have some LITs.
Yeah, I normally don't have an LIT there, but I've had enough of the chakhnas at socials, right? So, cool.
So, Yeah, so we get the customer back to the outlet. We want them to experience social again, to have to move, to walk out of social with a positive experience. Of course, for dine-in, we send out free meals. We give loyalty points, offers as well. We give to the customer. Now that we have a mechanism to capture the feedback in a better way, to create NPS, CSAT scores, we will use that to...
Well, you're capturing NPS and CSAT, huh? And that goes back to the central data as well.
That's the intent.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm curious. You talk about experiences. So I have two possible lenses to address here. You have a lot of these experiential elements, right? There's somebody who could play a violin, somebody could give flowers, somebody could do a lot of things in the kind of physical context. And there have been attempts to do this as a service before, but somehow too fragmented into one structured. I'm curious if I were to propose, let's say, a date at social and I could have some of these customized, curated experiences done. Is that something you've considered, experimented, played with at a company level?
I think now we are ready to launch that. A lot of effort has gone into understanding the customer.
The operations are pretty messy, but
yeah. So I think we are at that level where we will very soon, and I think that's something that we'll do via super loyalty. Cool. To push a lot of experience and money can't buy. It's more service led.
Absolutely.
Because dine-in is touch and feel. It's experience led. It's more.
This is the intangible brand emotion loyalty that the consumer can drive with the socials, right? I mean, that's the experience that I can't buy without being loyal. The other part I would love to understand a little more is this whole lens on brand engagements, because you work with a whole bunch of brands. Offline-wise, I've seen a very serious amount of brand promotions being done on 10 cards and collaborations of all sorts of shapes and sizes. And there's good money there as well, because brands who want to launch in the market or drive promotions have a certain appetite for this. Is that something you've considered leveraging in your first-party communication channels?
So there's restrictions on promotion of alcohol on WhatsApp. So that kind of limits
on WhatsApp.
What we can
do. There's a limitation across the board, but if it's, let's say, consented, database-driven guy who's known to be 21 or plus, is that still a problem?
So you can't promote alcohol in
or
WhatsApp in India. Some of this legal restrictions.
But then how do you get discovery done for all the cocktails that you make? And so that's all just physical stuff.
Digital. Mm. We do a lot of retargeting campaigns via Facebook. So that is open.
That is allowed.
That's allowed.
Okay.
So, although we do have a lot of collabs, we work with Johnny Walker.
That's what often you have a lot of collabs.
We want to explore emailers, and that is something that is very... So, you don't give... So, mobile number capture by itself is very difficult.
Yep, email on next level.
You get the customer's
level.
Email ID, it's the next level altogether.
Well, besides, we email Kholega from socials, and my socials emailing me might just be a Twitter storm that you'll get. Sure. So, I think it's just the whole perception of how you relate to an F&B brand and where you see them playing a role in your lives and how you want to engage. I think mobile app might be a good idea. I'm pretty certain you will have it at some point sooner or later. Because, you know, the Starbucks kind of experiences just make it very clear that if I walk in, I will open my app and I will pay with the app. And that's just how the experience is. And it turns out insane amount of money gets stored in Starbucks gift cards. So yeah, at some point that should happen. All right. So back to being, this whole lens on people and you assembling a bit of a technology stack via multiple partners and service providers and technology components as well. In some sense, is this a conscious choice that while you'll figure out internal capability building, you want to not, let's say, wait for that to happen. And that's why you'll try and speed things up via partners. So what is the lens on this build versus buy both on technology and people?
So, we want to leverage or ride on the expertise of certain partners.
Sure.
Also, we get a lot of benchmarking information, data. We want to be the market leaders. We have a lot of ideas which a partner can help us...
execute faster.
Execute faster.
Okay.
So, also at the same time, putting all our efforts in one particular area also would not... be good for us because we want to evolve in a lot of ways. There's a lot of things that we want to achieve and very fast, like in loyalty, the specific focus on loyalty.
Sure.
We want to give a lot of experiences that require certain skills. Similarly, on the tech side of capturing feedback, that itself requires... So we'd rather not do something where we put all our efforts in building something.
Fair enough.
We want to...
So in some sense, this is... enough to do, and building all of this in-house would take like too much effort and time, and perhaps the kind of talent supply might not be as straightforward, so might as well execute via partners while you control the strategy and the strings at the core. But I'm curious in terms of the benchmarking. Starbucks, of course, an international experience, but the whole reference points of what's the greatest result somebody's seen. Do you see somebody in India doing well, which you found personally intriguing? This guy seems to be doing well on loyalty.
In F&B, I am not too familiar with any brand which is doing...
Hard to kind of find a benchmark. Okay, this is gold standard.
because it comes down to data capture and something.
This is the same operational challenge everybody faces, right?
See, I'll give you an example of Smokehouse Delhi. Smokehouse Delhi, the menu, the food items, they're unique. They're more European, they're more continental. So when you look at the menu, you would probably have questions. You know what this is, the level of spice it has, if it's too bland, if it's what kind of meat is it? You know, basic questions. And as Indian consumers get more experimental with their food, they want to try it, but they want to understand it first.
Sure.
So when we have a QR code sitting on a Smokehouse Delhi table, no one will.
It doesn't work. No.
We tried it. We really pushed internally for the ops to ask the customers scan the QR code, but it doesn't help.
It's not the natural behavior, and that's too much of work to shift that behavior.
Yeah, and it's too much it's too much for the customer as well, that you know they call a server, they understand the menu, and then they place an order via DotPay. They come there for the experience. It's a more fine dining restaurant. So something that we are still exploring, or we are still trying to figure out what's the best way to capture the customer's data, to have more touch points going into the system. But for a more fine dining, for a more premium brand, it gets all the more difficult in dining to capture the customer's
data. Perhaps at checkout? I mean, have you considered that? I mean, when I say checkout, I mean bill. So when he's doing this, there's this little card and you'll say, thank you, blah, blah, blah. Give us your number. And on WhatsApp, instantly, you get something for all I care.
So that is one thing that we have looked at, but it hasn't worked. It's there. It's something that... So there's a resistance, especially in the minds of Indian consumers, to give their mobile number.
And spam karenge.
Spam karenge. And at the time, when you're leaving, unless you have... a bad experience or an exceptional experience, you don't do that.
So then the big trick to solve in the whole fine dining ecosystem, or at least the F&B ecosystem overall, is to just find one good enough excuse to ask a mobile number and hopefully not abuse it subsequently, because if you've taken it, perhaps the restaurant manager also has it. If he decides on his own accord to go spamming, it'll hurt the brand.
Exactly. And I think also we're looking at gamification. We're looking at other ways of exciting the customers to actually give, because if the customer believes that, you know, giving their personal details, and again, mobile number is the first point of data. There's date of birth, there's gender, there's PIN codes, which are relevant for a brand like us, where we operate multiple things, you know, there's workspaces, there's events and all. So WhatsApp is a very powerful channel.
Yeah.
Chatbots, two-way communication is something that we work with Gupshup. For the last 1 year, we've been working with them we went on from one-way campaigns to two-way campaigns to chatbots. So that is something that we want to explore. To maybe the customer could just send us a photo of the bill. You know, we give them a voucher.
I thought Easy Rewards people did that kind of stuff, right? I mean, scan the bill and then you'll get something out of it.
Yeah, but then, of course, when you're looking at, you know, tens of thousands of orders in a day and having, you know, all those things coming in.
I thought there's enough OCR technology to solve for that. But yeah, I clearly can imagine it's more an operational question mark across a whole bunch of these touch points, which are sort of unique to F&B and physical F&B, right? It's just the nature of the business that people don't see you guys in that light, that they want to give you phone numbers to get offers. A Smokehouse Delhi customer is not necessarily looking for like a 5, 10% off. It doesn't excite him. So he's not going to change his behavior for that, to just give a phone number to get an offer again. So what's interesting is just the fact that at the company level, you're very cognizant of this. It seems to have become a bit of a priority to do these things, you know, find partners who can solve for these problems and accelerate that, move in that direction. So yeah, clearly a lot of action due for the hospitality and entertainment space, and very interesting to understand the operational reality of, you know, stuff that we otherwise take for granted. In the e-commerce ecosystem, you would never have to worry about the customer putting in some information, because that's how the starting point a lot of times work. You sign up for a newsletter. Now, will I sign up for a social newsletter? If I do, then what do I get? And why will I engage with that email? It's very interesting. And I'm very curious to understand how it's being done elsewhere in other industries, or other, let's say, other parts of the world from the F&B lens. Because I'm pretty certain there is a lot of loyalty F&B brands drive just from the brand story of it. Can that be substantially enhanced by doing a greater job with data? I think that some evidence exists thanks to people like Starbucks, but there's more to be built. And well, Rahul, I wish you all the best for this journey in 2024 and hope you achieve the Nirvana state at Impresario. Thank you so much for doing this. So that was all about social school work powered by their CRM functions and loyalty program. While data is definitely hard to gather in the F&B industry,
is the only way for brands like Impresario to keep servicing their customers extremely well and keep them coming back for more. I hope you found this session interesting and full of dope. Don't forget to follow, subscribe, and rate us on your favorite podcast channels wherever you're listening to us.